Welcome to the Dentistry Speaks podcast, hosted by members of the Speaking Consulting Network. We interview leaders, meeting planners, and pioneers to help aspiring and seasoned dental speakers polish their skills and reach their potential.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this episode of the Dentistry Speaks podcast, brought to you by the Speaking Consulting Network. My name is Kevin Henry. I am honored to be the host of this podcast. I'm always honored whenever I get to bring on SCN members who have such a wide range of talents and information and knowledge to share with our listeners. And that's exactly what's going to happen today with my friend, Art Wiederman, CPA. Hey, Art, how are you?
I'm great, Kevin. How are you doing today?
I am doing great. I'm not going to use this podcast time to talk baseball with you, even though I think we could very easily. But I'm not going to take it off the rails. Instead, I'm going to have you introduce yourself quickly to our audience before we dive into a couple of topics today.
Sure. So my name's Art Wiederman. I've been a dental-specific CPA for 38 years. I started with at that time, it was the Pacific Institute of Management. And Dr. Jim Pride and Dr. Phil Whitener hired me to run their financial services division. And in 1989, I was kind of like Victor Kiam. I liked the product so much, I bought the company. So it became my own CPA firm that I ran for 33 years and ultimately took on my dear friend Pam Chamberlain as my partner. And we did tax planning, financial planning, and anything and everything dentists needed to help them to meet their personal and business financial goals. And then ultimately our firm, I merged the firm with a large local firm, and now I am working as a consultant to dentists in a lot of different areas for the CPA firm of Ide Bailey, and I'm out of Tustin, California. And I've also been a dental practice broker. I've helped a lot of my clients transition their practice. It's been kind of fun. A lot of our clients, I had several clients, I helped them buy their practices, and then I helped them sell their practices. So it came full circle. And I've lectured over the years to many of the local, state, national dental meetings. I lecture regularly. This year I'm lecturing both at the Northern and Southern California, the CDA conventions in Anaheim and San Jose. And last year I had a great time. I got to go to Orlando and lecture at the Academy of General Dentistry meeting in the summertime.
Not too bad. It's a wide range of talents, and obviously, you know, we've got a short amount of time here because I'd love to pick your brain on so many things, but I'm going to start today, if you don't mind. You mentioned tax planning, and I know that this time of year that is so on the front of so many people's minds, and I'm just going to kind of lob this out there. Are there big mistakes that you often see dentists make that could be easily avoided, and if so, what are they and how do they avoid those?
Well, I'm going to bring up two of them for you, Kevin. I think the first one is literally a failure to plan. I mean, all dentists, all business owners should be sitting down with their CPAs once or twice a year, maybe at the beginning of the year, figure out what is the year going to look like, plan and make sure that you're paying in taxes currently. And then at the end of the year, sit down and figure out, you know, did you have a better year? Did you have a worse year? And dentists have several things they can do. They can, you know, fund a retirement plan. I mean, we have dentists, you can set up a simple IRA and fund as little as $30,000 a year, or you can set up a defined benefit pension plan, sometimes as young as age 40, 45, and put away hundreds of thousands of dollars, tax deductible earning, you know, growing on a tax deferred basis. So that's one thing, is they don't sit down and plan. They don't plan their equipment purchases. You know, maybe you have somebody who wants to add a treatment room. And so they want to add that treatment room. Oh, maybe I'll do it in February. I'll say, well, why don't we do it in December? Because then we can write it off as long as it's placed in service before the end of the year. Putting your kids on the payroll to have them help you with stuff. I mean, I'm convinced that I have two adult children, and I'm convinced I had children for the sole reason of teaching me how technology works, you know? So that's what our dentist can do is, and you know, you can pay your son or daughter, if they're not making any other money, up to about, you know, almost $14,000 a year, and they won't have to pay any taxes, and you get to write off. So it's just sitting down with someone who understands all the angles, the write-offs. Maybe you want to buy a car, and that's the thing. And the other thing is, really not setting up this retirement plan I'm talking about, because it's just so important. Being able to, when you're, you know, to the age, to be able to retire when you want to, not when you have to. And again, you know, the government's paying, in depending on the state you live in, could be as much as 50 cents on the dollar.
Are you finding that some of this next generation of dentists that are coming in, or dental team members even, understand the value of retirement and really planning ahead, maybe more or less than some of the former generations?
You know, Kim, that's a great question. I don't think they take it as seriously as maybe I did when I was, you know, when I was younger, because the problem is that dentists are coming out of school with, you know, $300,000-$500,000 of debt. And if you want to go rent an apartment in a big city these days, you know, you could be looking at $2,000-$4,000 a month. So a lot of our younger dentists are, you know, they're just trying to make ends meet. They're trying to get by every day. They're trying to, you know, gas here in California is still over $5 a gallon. So they're not really thinking about it. And that's why, you know, I have one rule that I use in my work is it's the 65-25-10 rule. So, you know, someone's making a couple hundred thousand a year as a dentist. Live on 65% of that. That's 130,000. Plan on paying about 25% in taxes. And the other 10% we ask you to save. And unfortunately, not only dentists, but a lot of people live on the 90-25-15 rule, which is they live on 90% of what they make. They struggle to pay their taxes and fall behind. And then they go into credit card debt, which is a whole other conversation that's very concerning to me. I mean, the amount of credit card debt in this country is, now that the pandemic is over, has just gone exponentially off the charts. And, you know, people have been cooped up. So to answer your question, I think that younger people, I'm sure that if you gave them the urgency, they would, but they don't have the time, and they don't have the money to do that. And that's why it's important for dentists, if they can own their own practices, that gives them the vehicle to set up the retirement vehicle to do that.
You know, one thing I remember whenever I was the managing editor of Dental Economics way, way back in the day was the value that I kept hearing about of the CPA and the dentist working together, and the CPA really being a part of the dentist team, you know, the financial side of things. Has that gotten any better as far as the years have gone along, that the dentists are starting to understand the value of having you in that inner circle to really help them succeed?
I think some do. I think that some don't. And I think the ones that do, a lot of it comes from their parents and how they were raised and taught. And a lot of it comes from just their economic situation, in that, you know, dentists have financial stresses, like I said, because of their debt, because of just trying to pay their bills and taxes and inflation was what, 8.7% last year. And so all this pressure, it's like, well, you know, the CPA, oh gosh, I don't know if he or she can do much for me. And I just got to get my taxes. And I would like to encourage anybody out there who isn't really sitting down and planning out taxes. I mean, we've been able to, I did one thing. We had a doctor who was getting married. And he was marrying a wonderful lady. And he says, well, Art, I'm gonna get married on January 9th. And I said, no, you're not. He says, what do you mean, no, you're not? I said, you're getting married on December 28th. You can have the party on January 9th. We were able to save him $16,000 just by going from a single tax rate to a married filing joint tax rate. I mean, it's things like that, people building buildings and not knowing what a cost segregation study is, where you can get humongous tax deductions if you build a building or build out an office, doing things like that, and even working with the contractor. So it's things like that that a dental CPA knows about, and they have all the resources. We have all the resources, too.
Absolutely, and it makes perfect sense. And so I'm going to tie the tax planning in with another specialty that you mentioned. That's the brokering. Is there anything that we should know about tax planning purposes if you're planning to sell your practice? Is it good to have that done at the end of the year as well, just like the marriage example you just gave?
Well, there are a lot of things that you can do to save taxes. One thing that comes to mind is if you know that you're going to sell your practice, say within 3 or 4 years, you can set up a defined benefit plan. I'll give you an example of what we did with actually two clients. I'll use one of them as an example. They were both specialists. So we set up this special defined benefit pension plan, and the doctor funded about $155,000 in the first 3 years of the plan. And we set the formula up with the actuary and the third-party administrator so that when his practice sold, he was able to put away $400,000 tax deductible from the sales proceeds. So that's one thing to do. The other is how the sale is structured between goodwill and equipment, because it could be a 17% difference. And so those are a couple things that can be done to really save taxes on the sale of a dental practice.
And a question that I've heard asked of several CPAs, and I'd love your thoughts on this. You mentioned the technology earlier. Is it something that if you're going to sell the practice, should you invest in the technology before you sell it, or let the next owner find the kind of technology he or she really wants to put into that practice?
That is a really great question, Kevin. My advice is absolutely do not invest in a huge amount of technology before you sell your practice. Practices are valued based on revenues generated by the practice and net profit generated by the practice. So if you go out and buy a CBCT machine for $200,000 6 months before, your practice is going to be worth pretty much the same amount as it was worth before you bought that machine. So no, you don't want to go out and make huge, purchases. Now, if you're 3 to 5 years out and you don't have digital X-ray, and I know it's hard to believe for you and our listeners, there are still practices out there that do not use any kind of a digital X-ray system in their practice. That is something you need to have, because the young dentist coming out of dental school, they are not trained to work without this technology. In other words, they will come to you and they'll say, well, you don't have digital X-ray. You don't have DEXIS. You don't have SCHIC. You don't have one of these systems. And they say, no. They say, okay, well, I have to take $50,000 off what I can offer you because I have to go buy that because that's the only way I know how to practice. So those are things that we talk to people about. And when I do lectures on transitions for buyers and for sellers, we get into that topic a lot, what buyers should be looking for, what sellers should be looking for.
And I think that's fascinating because trying to merge the needs of both parties together is certainly at times an unenviable task because you have different generations that are looking at things differently, as well as my thought for what I don't want to do with the practice versus yours may be completely different.
Yeah, and it's important when you're buying a practice to number one, don't have a conniption if they don't have the most modern equipment. You can always get that done. I guarantee you the dental supply and dental equipment companies will be there at your beck and call whenever you need them. Make sure one other thing I tell buyers of dental practices is live in the community that you're going to work in. I mean, that allows you to get involved in your school, your church, synagogue, religious organization, and build your practice, the grassroots. And then everybody knows, oh, well, hey, Kevin's the, Dr. Henry's the dentist in our community. That's who we refer to. And doing that sellers, you want to make sure that you have strong revenues for the last couple of years of your practice, because buyers don't really want to buy a practice that's a sinking ship, and that. So there's a lot of things that you want to look at as far as if you're a buyer and if you're a seller of a practice. And by the way, Kevin, the sales price of your practice is one of my four cornerstones of retirement, because that's money that you can use to either live on before you start drawing your retirement and after taxes, or you can use that money to pay off your old mortgage, which I like to see you paid off, have paid off when you retire, things like that.
Well, I know we have just scratched the surface. There's a million different directions we could go with these topics, but obviously you're the expert on that, and I want to make sure that our listeners know how to get a hold of you or learn more about you if they want to follow up with any questions they might have.
Sure. So one thing is I do, every 2 weeks, I do a podcast called The Art of Dental Finance and Management with Art Wiederman, CPA. We've been publishing, we're in our fifth year. We have thousands of listeners all over the country, and we interview decision makers and thought leaders in our industry about finance and management. I've had several of the members of the Speaking Consulting Network have been on my podcast, and many of them I've known for 30, 35 years. So you just go to your Apple or wherever you get your podcasts, I'm there. And if you wanted to get a hold of me, my direct phone number is 657-279-3243. That comes to my computer through my CPA firm, iBailey, that I'm with. And my email is awiederman, that's W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N, at iBailey, E-I-D-E-B-A-I-L-L-Y.com. Don't spell it E-I. The state of New York, when I was born, spelled it and got my birth certificate wrong, so they had to fix it.
So. Oh, my gosh. Wow.
But yeah. Anyway, so that'd be the best way to get a hold of me. And I'm, I'm speaking at the Northern and Southern CDA conventions this year. And in fact, this week I'm doing some lectures for the CDA, and real excited about that. I just love being behind a microphone and getting in front of an audience. I think I always have three happy places: on a golf course, on a fly fishing lake or stream, and either in front of an audience speaking or in front of my microphone.
Well, I'm glad we got you in front of the microphone today, my friend.
I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Enjoy the conversation, and seriously, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate that.
Kevin, thank you so much, too.
Absolutely. And thanks to all of you who have listened to this episode of the Dentistry Speaks podcast. Please check out what the Speaking Consulting Network offers at speakingconsultingnetwork.com. There's a myriad of opportunities there for dental speakers, as well as if you're a meeting planner or looking for your next speaker, speakingconsultingnetwork.com is your place to check things out. Until next time, this is Kevin Henry signing off for the Dentistry Speaks podcast.
Thank you for joining us. To learn more, visit speakingconsultingnetwork.com. We look forward to seeing you next time on the Dentistry Speaks podcast.